Stephen Dedalus's world unfolds in early 1900s Ireland, where Catholic doctrine shapes every thought and family fortunes crumble without warning. His journey from wide-eyed child to rebellious artist captures that universal adolescent feeling that nobody truly understands you. Except Joyce's version comes with more religious guilt and poetic introspection than most teenage diaries. What makes this story revolutionary isn't just what happens to Stephen, but how we experience it. The language itself evolves as he grows, beginning with childlike simplicity and maturing into philosophical complexity. We witness consciousness developing in real time, a literary technique that changed fiction forever. Before coming-of-age stories became a genre, Joyce crafted the definitive portrait of an artist finding his voice against the crushing weight of family, church, and nation. Young Stephen begins his journey at Clongowes Wood College, where Jesuit discipline shapes boys through fear and rigid structure. His world is small but intensely felt. Christmas dinner erupts into political arguments about Parnell and the church, while Stephen watches in confused silence. When Father Dolan unjustly punishes him for broken glasses, Stephen experiences institutional cruelty firsthand. With trembling courage, he reports this injustice to the rector, navigating dark corridors like a pilgrim seeking truth. His family's financial collapse forces them from comfortable Blackrock to cramped Dublin quarters, and as their furniture disappears, so does Stephen's innocence. While other boys form playground gangs, he stands apart, observing milk carts and sensing his difference. The rhythms of ordinary life, which others accept without question, already feel insufficient to him. His sensitivity marks him as an observer rather than a participant, the first sign of the artist emerging within the boy. Adolescence hits Stephen with overwhelming force. Wandering Dublin's red light district, he's torn between Catholic guilt and physical desires. His first encounter with a prostitute leaves him strangely detached, the beginning of his rebellion against religious teaching. Each forbidden experience chips away at his faith. The school's religious retreat employs psychological warfare through vivid sermons about eternal damnation. The priest describes hell with terrifying precision, souls packed like bricks in an infinite furnace, making Stephen physically ill. His artistic imagination becomes his tormentor. Fearing damnation, he confesses in a moment of extraordinary psychological complexity. The priest's unexpected compassion triggers Stephen's dramatic spiritual transformation. He then embraces religious devotion so extreme it borders on pathological. He structures prayer periods, mortifies his senses, and accepts discomforts as spiritual exercises. Yet beneath this holy facade, Stephen struggles. Small disruptions, his mother sneezing during prayer, a door slamming, provoke spiritual panic. Once transcendent rituals become mechanical. When the director suggests priesthood, Stephen briefly imagines himself in clerical robes before recognizing a subtle hostile instinct against religious life. The mental image of Reverend Stephen Dedalus, S.J., transforms into a sour-faced specter, his soul rejecting a path that would constrain his artistic nature. Stephen's artistic awakening occurs on Dollymount Strand in a transformative scene. After rejecting the priesthood, he experiences an ecstasy of flight as his soul soars beyond worldly constraints. A girl standing in shallow water becomes a vision, part spiritual, part sensual, that reveals his true calling. He runs along the shore, embracing life with an intensity that eclipses his previous religious fervor. At university, Stephen develops his aesthetic theory through conversations with his friend Lynch. Drawing from Thomas Aquinas, he identifies three qualities of beauty: integritas, wholeness, consonantia, and claritas, radiance. In a moment of pure inspiration near dawn, a spirit filled him, pure as the purest water, sweet as dew, moving as music. He composes a villanelle that captures his artistic soul's yearning. Stephen has found his true religion in art. his apparent rebellion reveals itself as the necessary path toward authentic creation. The artist emerges not despite his Catholic upbringing, but through it, the intensity of his religious training giving depth to his artistic vision. As Stephen's artistic identity solidifies, he systematically severs limiting connections. His relationship with his mother deteriorates when she objects to his university ambitions, a first noiseless sundering of their lives. In an uncomfortable scene, she scrubs his neck while lamenting that a university student still needs maternal washing, a moment both touching and suffocating. Irish nationalism falls next. When his friend Davin pleads with him to be one of us, Stephen declares, "This race and this country and this life produced me. I shall express myself as I am." He refuses to serve causes he no longer believes in, vowing to fly by those nets that would constrain his developing consciousness. The most painful break comes with religion, explored through conversation with Cranley. Stephen admits he tried to love God but failed. When Cranley urges him to take communion simply to please his mother, arguing that a mother's love is not uncertain in this stinking dunghill of a world, Stephen refuses compromise, declaring he'll use silence, exile, and cunning to preserve his artistic integrity at any cost. The novel's final section uses journal entries to reveal Stephen's evolving consciousness as he prepares for self-imposed exile. His observations grow increasingly poetic. Wild spring, scudding clouds, oh life! From library steps, he watches swallows return from the south, wheeling in March skies, birds that build ever an unlasting home under the eaves of men's houses. This image of temporary belonging mirrors his own planned journey. His final entries pulse with determination. His declaration to encounter for the millionth time the reality of experience and to forge in the smithy of my soul the uncreated conscience of my race serves as both personal manifesto and artistic mission. The novel concludes with his invocation, "Old Father, Old Artificer, stand me now and ever in good stead," connecting Stephen to his mythical namesake Daedalus, who crafted wings for escape. Unlike Icarus, Stephen seems unconcerned about flying too close to the sun, his ambition boundless. A century after publication, Stephen's struggle continues to speak to anyone who's felt trapped by expectations or misunderstood by society. His journey from conformity to artistic freedom captures that universal quest to discover our true selves beneath social conditioning. Joyce's revolutionary narrative technique, allowing language to evolve with his protagonist's consciousness, transformed modern literature and remains startlingly innovative. The novel's unflinching examination of sexuality, religious doubt, and national identity maintains its relevance. Stephen's declaration that he will forge in the smithy of my soul the uncreated conscience of my race speaks to the artist's responsibility to articulate what others cannot. This isn't just about becoming an artist, it's about becoming yourself, whatever the cost. As we follow Stephen from innocence through rebellion to self-discovery, we recognize our own struggles to break free from expectations. His journey reminds us that finding your authentic voice sometimes requires leaving behind everything familiar, a painful but necessary flight toward becoming who you're meant to be.